afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Goodness gracious, the weather is changing again. I think the other show the other day, we had a beautiful day. The sun was up. Pool was getting ready to open here. The day before that, we had tornado warnings. Now today, well, we just have a little bit of rain, possibly. You know, we're coming up on Easter, and I really find it's a great time to say, let's look forward. Let's look where we've been, but let's start to just turn that head forward and start going that way. So many of my friends lately have been saying, you know, I really would like to see things get better. I would like it to look like this. And the this is always the picture of their past, where they always thought that things were great. People they were with were fabulous, even though they're exes now. Places they used to live that they don't live anymore. All of these things in their past, they glorify to make them look great because they really don't know where they're going in the future. So I think as we come up on Easter, I always find it's a clearing out. You know, you bring out the new clothes, you clean out your house. I know myself, I've got plastic containers all over the counter there I have to separate later and throw away. But it's just about moving forward, clearing things out. So today we're going to be talking about clearing out energy. We're going to be talking about how to intuitively know and be in that space and not dragging all that old baggage with you all the time, and how to be able to know for yourself how hard that is anymore, because we always tend to hear things from other people, or we say something and we want to hear from someone else to verify it or judge. You know, we always want them to give us some more information. We want them to tell us that, yes, that's right what you're saying, or yes, that's right what you're hearing. When really, what is your gut? What is your intuition? How can you learn to read what is good for you? And to know that it truly is good and that it's maybe just not something that is appearing as such. Today my guest is Tammy Urbanake. Oops, sorry, Tammy. You clarify that for me. she is the author of Loving Connor, a clairvoyance memoir on loving, bonding, and healing. And you know, since Tammy got on the phone, I have been so scattered today, I don't know what's up. But maybe that will figure that out during this hour. I'm usually random, but today I'm scattered. So we'll have to draw that, bring myself energy back into place. So Tammy, thank you so much for being with us today on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you. And, you know, it seems like, don't you think around this time of year, more and more people are saying, what's up, what's coming, what's going on, you know, clearing things out, but they keep looking back, you know, and they don't really know where to go.
Yeah, definitely. I see many individuals wanting to claim their comfort zone. They want to claim what's really familiar, and that's when we find ourselves repeating old patterns, old behaviors, old thoughts, and we're not moving out of that pattern into something that's new. And we all want to experience something new, or at least I think a lot of people, maybe not everybody, wants to experience something new in the springtime, the summertime, have different experiences, different relationships, but there is a necessity to move out of that comfort zone.
And, you know, moving out of comfort zones is not really that great. I know a lot of us will speak sometimes about our past, and we will say when we grew up, this, that, or the other occurred. And it wasn't great. And maybe that ingrained in my DNA, ingrained in the way I think, ingrained in the way I interact with other people. And they don't realize that that may be their comfort zone that they have to maybe shift out of. You know, granted, we may have ingrained it in us, but we can also let it go, right? I think that's what your book is about. You know, you said all of the things that happened in the beginning of your life and how they affected your life, but you did move through that and past that, right?
Absolutely. My life is completely different now than it was 20 years ago. And if I had maintained those patterns, it horrifies me to think of where I would be, given how difficult my life was as a direct result of my choices. I wasn't a victim of anything. I made certain choices at age 18 that delivered certain consequences, outcomes that were painful. And I got to a point around age 23 that I said, I have to make different choices. This isn't working for me. And thankfully, I have a very strong family. I'm very close with my parents, and they were right there backing me up to make different choices. And they were right there with me when I was making the painful choices, and they never judged it. They never tried to force me to make a different choice. And I'm really thankful for that. I guess I needed to learn a certain way at the time.
Yes, and some of us learn those things and some of us don't. And I think that I usually call them the same experiences just in drag. You know, it could be the same type of experience, just with a different person or a different situation or a different addiction or a different location. You know, that old saying that who's always showing up, it's you, right? And how
Absolutely.
People have to separate that out and how do they look at that?
Yeah, absolutely. My issue was that I married my first husband, I think, as a way, I loved him, but I think as a way of wanting to take care of his issue, which was alcoholism. And so I endured a year with him of a lot of violent outbursts. And he never hit me up until the very end. And it was not even a hard kick, but it was a kick. And that wasn't why I left him. I left him because I was afraid that with our daughter, who was only a month old at the time, that he would need to be home to babysit while I went to work. I was working in McDonald's at age 19. And that he would hurt her with negligence or something. Not that he would purposely hurt her. He wasn't that type of person. He was a compassionate person. But he had an issue with alcohol, and when he would drink, he couldn't stop. And when he couldn't stop drinking, all of his anger would come up, all of his frustrations would come up, and then he would explode by punching walls and tossing furniture and yelling and screaming and so on and so forth. And I just decided that my daughter needed something different, so I left. But exactly what you just said, I didn't change the energy behind it. I didn't change my choices. I just changed the person. So I went into another relationship and another relationship that had very similar vibes, very similar patterns. And finally, I decided this isn't working for me anymore, and I needed to change my priority. So I left men. I cut off my painful relationships. I stopped dating, and I focused on my daughter. I focused on going to college, and I focused on earning enough money to pay my rent.
And sometimes some people find that so difficult to do because in this day and age, you know, goodness, it's hard enough to be able to keep food on the table and have a place to live and to be a single parent with kids. I mean, I know I've done it. It's not always that easy. And a lot of people say, it's just too hard for me. I think right when they get to just before that wall where everything's going to be great is when they quit, you know. And sometimes, though, mm-hmm. I think, too, there's a lot of people that don't know that life is not always supposed to be candy cotton and cupcakes, you know. And they mm-hmm. may have been brought up that way, or that's maybe the way they came in, whatever the reason or the story is around it. A lot of people just think that it's going to be absolutely easy. I'm just going to snap my fingers and it's going to be here today. And they get so disenamored, you know, when that happens that they can't see straight.
You're right. I agree. And it comes down to, what are you invested in? Are you invested in your pain, or are you invested in your healing? And most people don't want to say, I'm invested in my pain, because that's not a nice thing to say, and it's not nice to hear it. But it's true. For a lot of people, it's true. Their investment is in their pain. And when you find that your life is one painful event after another, you need to ask yourself where your investment is and to be honest. A lot of people don't want to be honest with that answer because, again, it doesn't sound good. But you're never going to change anything until you get to that honest answer. And my investment was in painful relationships until I decided I don't like that investment anymore.
And you were lucky enough, though, to be able to make the choice, and that would be the end of those lessons. So how did you get to that spot and go to the next step? Like we always like to say, we've opened the door to the abyss. Now what do we do?
I got to that place with that my final boyfriend, who was addicted to gambling, and he was taking money from me to support his habit, and I'm not sure exactly what the defining moment was. I remember I was on a call with my mom, and I just said, I'm so sick of this. I'm done. And I told her, because he was living with me, and I told her that I couldn't really afford to kick him out because I needed his help paying the rent until the college semester was over, and then I could go deliver newspapers as a second income, which is, it's pretty easy second income. And she said, no, we'll give you money. We'll loan you, I should say, because I paid them back. We'll loan you money for the next 3 months until this college semester is over, and then you get your second job if you want to kick him out. And I said, okay, I'm doing it. And I understood that it was all an illusion. This financial security was really an illusion because, yeah, he would give me money for half the rent, but then he took money out of my account to go gamble. So it was just, once I understood I was functioning under an illusion, then I could say, I just don't want this anymore. And when I closed the door to those painful relationships, I focused on my self-respect. I focused on my priorities. I stopped judging myself so much. I really became invested in self-compassion. I became thankful for what I was able to achieve, the steps that I was able to take. I accepted assistance more openly. My parents were always wanting to offer assistance, but many times I would resist it. So I opened myself up to their assistance, and I listened to their advice, and I listened to advice that made sense from other people. So that is how I got to a place where I stopped making that painful choice.
And that's definitely... you were lucky, and some people are, and some people are not. Can you tell us a little bit how you started to actually pay attention, though? Like, what in your, like, as you went forward, you had to intuitively know what was good or what was not good or what was right or what was wrong, and how could you make those choices? Because a lot of people will say, you know, am I coming from emotion? Am I coming from past remembrances? And how do I create my good future that I want from here forward?
I always knew I wanted to be a teacher, so I knew that going to college was what I needed to do. And I received financial aid in order to do that. But it was difficult working two jobs, going to college and raising my daughter. So there was definitely a period of time there where I was tired all the time, and there were a couple of times I wanted to give up on college because it just got really hard. But I kept going because I knew the end result was going to be my degree in education, and then, you know, I wouldn't need to earn such a low wage. That was my motivation. But I knew I always had a passion for teaching.
And then you did teaching,
but
then how did you get from teaching to doing some of the clairvoyant work that you're doing now? How did you get there? How did you get to that path?
My father is a medium. He's a direct medium. So the work that he does is a little different than my work. My work is very similar to John Edwards or James von Prague. Not exactly the same, but there is a similarity. And very early on, I was told that I'm a medium. It's genetic. Uh-huh. It's not something that you just decide to do. And I didn't want to do it at first because there was a lot of fear around it. And then throughout my 20s, I knew I had the ability, but I couldn't hear or see anything because I had such a strong fear of ghosts. And by the time I was told that my ability would develop between my late 20s and my early 30s. And sure enough, in my very early 30s, around 30, 31, I was really working on healing my fear of ghosts, my fear of deceased people. And once I finally healed that fear in totality, my ability to hear and see and communicate rapidly began developing, rapidly meaning within a matter of months after years of not hearing anything. So I decided that I'd been working in education for about 12 years at that point, and I decided that I needed to transition into this line of work as a part of my soul pathway to offer assistance. What I didn't know at the time was that it was going to be more of working with people's guides. I just assumed that I would be communicating with deceased people. And I thought at first, how am I going to earn an income doing that? I mean, how many people are going to want to talk to their dead mother? So I didn't know how to attract enough people to continue supporting an income. And then it just very, very early on shifted to guides. And so people come to me wanting life guidance from their guides.
You know, that's so interesting because a lot of people will say, this is new age. This is something that really hasn't been around for a long time. I think it's just that it's new age in its acceptance. It's always been around, don't you believe?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you could look at the ancient Greek oracles, and they were communicating information. It's not exactly the same thing, but you're right. It's been around a long time.
You know, when I lived in Scottsdale, we would go up to Sedona a lot, and that's, you know, this type of work is everywhere. That's just what it's all about. And everybody knew the language. They knew what you were talking about when you said medium or spirit guides or, you know, energy from the earth. And everybody, that was a common language. And I just find that it's just of recent that some of these words that we talk in our sentences are now coming into other people that would never, ever know what you're talking about. They're starting to hear these words, and they're starting to want to know what those words mean. And then, so in other words, it's like creating this whole other language that eventually I think almost everybody will probably be able to start communicating with any type of energy that's out there. I think, granted that there's a lot of, you know, people that are really great at it like yourself, but you're also, by doing that, you're asking the people to wake up themselves, what kind of energy is in themselves to be able to pay attention, right?
Absolutely. It's anybody and everybody communicates with their guides. Everyone communicates with their spirit guides. It's just that a lot of people don't know they are. And your guides are going to work with you when you don't even know that they exist. They're going to work with you unconsciously. And they're going to work with you in the sleep state. When you do know that your guides exist, you can get to a point where you're communicating with them on more of a conscious level. I can't say that everyone can get to a point where you can hear them audibly, where you can hear their words, their tone of voice, but you can still communicate with them and receive their assistance. So I always remind people, don't put a package or a limitation on how they should communicate with you or assist you, because if you do, you're going to miss it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times people think they have to, oh, I'm going to stand here and wait for the feather to fall down in front of me to be able to know if I should make my next move. You know, they're always putting it in that context where they are almost testing the guides or testing the energy out there to be able to see that response, you know. And that kind of will almost always set you up for failure, I think.
It will, because number one, your guides are not going to play games. They don't play games. And so if you are or anyone is coming across with an energy of prove to me you exist, they're not going to engage in that. That's not their purpose. And so their purpose is to assist you on multiple levels. They're not going to just assist your conscious mind, because that is only about 4 or 5% of your awareness. They're going to assist you unconsciously, subconsciously, from a heart perspective, a soul perspective, and your higher body perspective. If they were to just work with your conscious mind, they would be such a huge disservice to you, and that would be so disrespectful, because that's only 5% of you. So they have to work with all these different elements of you if they're going to truly guide you as a soul, and that is their purpose, to guide you as a soul, not just guide your conscious mind. So I always tell people, especially new individuals who come to me, you may not hear what you want to hear. You know, you may think that they're going to tell you X, Y, and Z, and they tell you A, B, and C, and it totally throws you sideways, because you weren't expecting them to talk about your mother, or you weren't expecting them to talk about your 12 years old or your 3 years old or whatever they're bringing up to you. And so then you start to shut down. You might start shutting down a little bit, because they're giving you uncomfortable information that they're asking you to work with. But even if you shut down consciously, you're still going to retain it subconsciously.
So how would somebody know who their spirit guides are, and if they are good spirit guides, or, as you've said before the show, being a false guide? And how would you even know all of that? I guess the answer would probably be we would just have to ask somebody like you, or would others be able to know this also? Or can they find it out on their own?
You can always find it out on your own. It takes a level of awareness, intuitive, and initiative. You can definitely ask other teachers, other spiritual teachers, and anyone who knows what they're doing is going to know that there are many fraudulent personalities out there. So when I have a session with a person, one of the very first parameters that I set up is to have the correct guides come through. So there are a lot of non-physical deceased people walking around, and a lot of those individuals, many of those individuals, like to play games. They like to screw with people's minds. They get their jollies off of it. So I will not allow them, whoever they are, to come into my office and pretend to be someone's guide. Number one, their energy is going to feel really off, and so that's my first indicator. And then number two, they're going to say things that just feeds back into the person's belief system, feeds back into the person's false belief system, into their pain. So essentially, probably telling them just what they want to hear, and that's going to feed back into a false belief, therefore creating pain. So I know I have a feeling. When spirit guides are around me, their frequency feels a certain way, and there's always compassion. Your guides do not judge. They will not judge. They're not going to just tell you what you want to hear, and they're never going to take care of you, and they're never going to ever insinuate that they'll take care of you. They're not a guardian angel. They are a guide. They guide you in the direction to get to a deep place of passion and joy. So they're not going to just give you a book of every step that you're supposed to take. That would be saying you can't do it yourself. And that is very disrespectful. I've never seen or heard guides disrespecting the person that they're working with. So their energy feels a very specific way, and actually I was told I would be tested on that, and I was. I was about to begin a session. It was over the phone, and I felt some guides come in, and I tuned into their energy intuitively, and I felt just the least bit amount of shifting. But that was enough shifting of energy frequency to tell me these were fake guides. And so I demanded that they leave. And that was my test. So I can sense when there is authenticity there. So for a person to know the difference, you first need to be able to feel, not just emotions. So that's just one part of feeling. Feeling intuitively, feeling body sensations, feeling your breath, feeling your brainwave, feeling your heartbeat, feeling everything within your own energy and your body, really mastering that is going to give you the tool that you need to know exactly who your guides are.
Goodness, and it's almost, how many people are actually at that level where they're able to be attuned to themselves to know all that information? I know with myself, when I would be doing healthcare, you know, in the past 40 years, we would always say, when you go into the room when a baby is born, all that light energy is in there, all that good frequency, everybody's in a good place. You know how when you're drawn into a room at a party for a newborn, everybody feels great,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you go into another room and like an elderly person may be dying, and there's a different type of energy. So I guess sometimes I say to people, you know, how is your energy feeling? And they don't know what that means. And I just mention about those two situations. And you can almost feel something in them uplift when it's a baby situation, but you can feel it almost sink to the floor when it's the opposite situation. So for someone to say, I don't know what energy means, I think that might be a good example of what a shift in energy may be. Do you think?
Yes, definitely. Or another example I offer to people is, you know, you ever walk in a room and you can just feel that people are angry, but maybe their body language doesn't show it, or you walk in a room and there's a lot of fear. Well, that's energy.
Yeah. I know when I grew up, my mother had a lot of that. And you could almost just, you would be driving up to the house and you would say, oh, I can just feel it. It was just like this sink thing, you know, that your gut and your stomach just fell to the floor. So you were already set up for what you were going to experience when you got to the door, you know, and you kind of just knew it. And it was like, oh, really, you know, and you just knew somehow, some way what it was all about, you know, what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, at one time, you know, I've got four kids, and we always talk about this. Oh, my goodness, when, you know, when my daughter would come home and she'd be in a good mood or, you know, and she'd have a great time, we would say, oh, her energy precedes her. That was our great comment. You know, her energy precedes her. We could feel it. She must be home, you know. And then another time when she had gotten a speeding ticket, oh, my goodness, you know, I'd pick up the phone and I'd say, what's wrong? You know, and then she got a ticket, you know. So we kind of knew. See, so those are types of energy shifts, how people can start to feel that, to know what you and I are talking about and how energy in our body, we can feel it or notice it. And I think of, when I think of spirit guides, I think of, you know, when you say that they're not going to control or they're not going to create or they're not going to do all that for you, but I almost think of it like you sit down and you say, I thought of it before. It's almost like you say, you know, about, I'm going to have a safe driving today, and you're intuitively, for some reason, something says, turn your head to the right, and you say, oh, that guy's too close. It's sort of like that little bit idea that would say, turn your head, you know, and listen to it. And how many people always say, I should have done that, but I didn't do that. I heard that I should have not gone this way, but I did it anyway. And is that also a shift in energy?
It is. It's a feeling of energy. So you might be feeling your own intuition, or you could be hearing your guides, but your guides are always going to support your intuition. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't really matter. The point is, are you receiving that assistance, whether it's your intuition or your guides? And yeah, that's a great example of how else they offer you assistance. They can nudge you to kind of, hey, go talk to that person, or hey, look to your left, notice that thing over there. They do that. They will encourage you to look something up. You might be thinking, oh, I should go Google that, whatever it is, and it's information that you've been wondering about that can help you, or they'll offer you dreams sometimes to symbolize assistance that that you need. Sometimes also what happens is they will have a conversation with you and you will have a conversation with them totally unconscious. And then you have a dream that represents that unconscious conversation. So you could be, you could have absolutely no awareness that you just had a 10-minute conversation with your guides, but then you have a dream about it. And that's the assistance. Hmm.
Goodness. Well, now let's go into that little topic that you just said, because I will get the ideas, oh, that sounds cool, and I'll write out a whole page of an idea on a concept, and then I'll set it to the side, but then I won't do anything with it. And then I'll get another one. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I could write, you know, tons of these little things, right? And so is that just my, just in, is that your, I don't know what that is. Can you explain what
it's
that
procrastination.
Might be?
It's procrastination.
Procrastination on doing something with it, or
yes,
with getting the idea.
When you have an idea and you write it down, you don't follow through, that is procrastination. And the definition of procrastination is fearing your own power.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Most people that I have worked with have a fear of their own personal power for a variety of reasons. Maybe their mother had a fear of her own power, and you absorbed that issue. It can be that you were punished for expressing your own power, and now you fear it. It can be that you're highly religious, and you're not allowed to express your power because you'll be punished, and so you don't. There's so many reasons why you could fear your own power, but procrastination, the definition, is fearing your own power. And when you have ideas and you don't follow through on a regular basis, that is the example of procrastination.
Okay, so if you get a lot of these all the time, you can't follow through on all of them, so what do you do with them? Or how do you get through that and work through that topic?
Well, if you have a specific idea that you were just talking about, you think, oh, that's a great idea, and you write it down, and then you have it in front of you, don't walk away from it. Don't put it aside. Think, okay, this is my idea. How can I make this work? Or how can I adapt it so that it works? Or how can I do part of it so that it works? Really work with it so that you begin manifesting or creating that idea, bringing it into a physical reality. If you put it aside and you don't come back to it and you have one excuse or another as to why you're doing that, that is procrastination. So the only way to stop procrastinating is to take action. And so asking yourself, what can I do, what action can I take to follow through with this idea or part of this idea?
And then how do, it, let's say that somebody has had that ingrained in them for generations, and how does that dissipate or not have so much power over someone, just by someone else's actions?
You're right that many people, it's generational, and it can be so generational that it's actually in your DNA, this tradition of procrastination, this tradition of fearing your own power. Well, the way to work at healing that is to, you have to get to the root causes. You have to get to the deep understanding, why do you fear your own power? Why do you personally fear your own power? And some people don't want to admit they fear their own power, but you have to admit what the issue is, the real issue is, if you're going to get to the cause of it. So you have to get to the cause of it, and there's usually an age attached to the cause. At what age did you begin learning that you needed to fear your own power? Most people fear their own power for a safety reason or a perceived safety reason, to avoid punishment, to avoid judgment of some sort. Those are the two main reasons that I have seen, whether that it's a fear of ridicule or a fear of punishment, which are kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have the cause, then you can begin working at healing it at its root cause.
Well, I think that there's a whole lot of people that I know, and we could all say that we all have those things that we need to work on. So how do they even go day to day? I think just by listening to each of each day and paying attention and making conscious decisions and actions each day?
Yes, you can do that, and you can identify what do you want to work on. Our whole life is about being on a healing journey, and I'm still on a healing journey. I always want to evolve and continue learning. So some people, they think, well, you know, I'll work on this issue for 10 years. Well, what else are you going to do for 10 years? Life is about healing. It just means when you are healing, your life becomes easier, simpler. It becomes more joyful, and that's the whole point of it. So you have to ask, what do I want to work on? If you feel like fear of your own personal power is a core issue, then you say, okay, well, I want to work on that core issue. I don't want to work on the symptoms anymore. I want to work on the issue. Then you start asking yourself different questions like, when did I start fearing my own power? Why do I start fearing my own power? Then look at your parents. Did my father fear his power? Did my mother fear her power? You might look at siblings. You might look at grandparents. Just to find patterns, what you're looking for. And when you know what your patterns are, and you can, to the point where you can document them, then you can begin changing those patterns. But a lot of people ignore their patterns, and patterns can be very subtle to the very obvious. Most people look for obvious. What I just told a client earlier today is that you need to look for the subtle, because that's our worst enemy. Our patterns can be so subtle and that they continue on. They never get addressed because they're so subtle. Right. But they're the worst ones because they stay under the radar. When we have a really obvious pattern, we usually address it to some degree. You need to look for the subtle patterns. And once you have those identified, then you ask why. Why is that my pattern? Then you identify that answer, which is going to take some time. Then you begin shifting it. You start making different choices that are not in line with the old pattern. Then you see results.
And definitely I can see what you're saying about when it's something that's really big, it's something that's turning your screws every day, you'll make a change because it's really putting pressure on you. But those other subtle patterns are the ones that, oh, yeah, okay, everybody goes, okay, you know, they're kind of like dissing or just not giving enough credence to those other things that go along. It's almost like saying, yeah, I know, but, you know, a lot of people say that, and I think that's a lot of times, too, when that's almost that undercurrent that you say, core issue that's hanging around, right?
Right, exactly. Those subtle patterns will continue feeding into the core issue. And what I have found is that,
go ahead.
I was just going to say what I have found in a lot of individuals is that they tend to work on the symptoms, never finding resolvement, and that is going to always be the case. You as a doctor, you know you can't just treat a symptom. You have to treat the cause.
Yes, you will. It will come back to bite you every single time. So can we talk a little bit about you use Tai Yi, and you're a practitioner of it, and what is that, and how does that help anyone? How did you even get started with that?
Tai Yi is spelled T-A-I for Tai, and then Y-I for Yi, two separate words. It's an ancient Chinese hands-on healing modality. It actually predates acupuncture in history, and Tai Yi simply means supreme health or supreme balance in English. So most people are resigned to the fact that there's going to be pain in life. Now, it is realistic to say life is not about perfection. It's not about everything being perfect all the time. That's true. But it is possible to live a life without pain. And when you have supreme balance, there is no pain. So when something comes along your way that is uncomfortable or annoying, let's say, you deal with it. And you move on from it. It's a very minor thing. And then there you see individuals who seem to have trauma after trauma after trauma, whatever that is. So when we are in a state of pure balance, we are healing and we are healed. Tai Yi is a hands-on modality that works with the meridian system of the body that is similar to acupuncture. So if any of your listeners get acupuncture, they may have heard their acupuncturist talk about the meridian system. They learn that in school. Well, what is also true is that we have a meridian system not only for the physical body, but for our mentals, our emotional, and even our spiritual aspects. Tai Chi uses pressure points on the physical body and universal energy in order to treat an issue. There are over 4,000 treatments that we continue to learn every time we attend class, and we need to maintain our continuing education by attending 4 weekends a year, 4 days per weekend. We're tested about 4 times a year to ensure our competency, and we're given a grade that has to be publicized. So if a person, for example, has heart disease, there is a treatment called the disease of heart, the heart of disease, that works specifically with the sac around the heart at removing the toxins from the sac around the heart to begin treating that heart disease and the cause of the heart disease. And then if a person has brain injuries, there is a treatment called fire of the brain that begins rewiring the brain so that the neurotransmitters are working effectively. It begins working with the neurotransmitters and also releasing toxins from the brain. And then there is a treatment for a person who has a lot of anger. Anger usually covers up fear. So there's a treatment called eighth level of fearful anger. That is for a person who has so much anger, they have physical issues, arthritis, heart disease, and other a range of other ailments going on in the body, ulcers. So each treatment is specifically designed to work with the meridian system in such a way that it treats a very specific issue.
And, you know, I also do acupuncture, and when we talk to people, we're also always asking about their mental and emotional status. At the same time, we're asking about their physical status because it is one in the same. I mean, when you're working also, I'm sure you're finding the same thing, is that organs are associated with emotions. And when someone says, you know, I'm really angry, what happens to them? You know, their face is getting really red. They might have issues with their liver, you know. So these things show mm-hmm. up in different areas, and it's being able to read that and say, those are just ideas that are giving me, saying, yes, I see that you're angry. You know, somebody's sitting there and their face is getting really red, and you're looking at their medical things, you're going to say, you know, what are you really angry about? How many times, you know, is people not going to ever say that they're angry? They're just going to say, my cholesterol is high, you know? But how or where is that gotten affected? And when you're saying this also, you know, when people are stuck in their life and things just aren't working right, it will usually show up as pain somewhere in their body. You know, that's all about being able to flow. Your body has got to flow. I always like to tell people, just think of yourself as, you know, when you hang sheets on the line outside, that's how your body is. When you hang up that skeleton, you know, in the chiropractor's office, it flows. It blows in the wind, right? And they're like, oh, no, it doesn't move. See here, and they'll poke you. And it's really just not true. You know?
Absolutely. The emotions and the physical body are very much interrelated. And different people, as we all know, have different genetics, different DNA. And so different individuals are going to manifest issues differently or maybe not at all. But a lot of it, people are having difficulties with their digestive system. They're having difficulty with their liver, their heart, their lungs. So, for example, a person who carries a lot of grief, it usually lodges in their lungs, and they might find that they get colds a lot, or they're getting other viruses that impact them quite a bit, or they have a hard time breathing deeply. A person, just like you said, who's really angry, they may have a liver that's not processing the toxins, releasing toxins the way it should, or a person who has a lot of fear, it's going to usually impact their kidneys and their adrenals. Well, if their adrenals are impacted, their hormones are going to be impacted, and they could just be completely whacked out emotionally if that fear is not resolved and if it's a significant amount of fear. So you're right. It's going to impact the body to different varying degrees depending on how strong the emotion is and how much of it has been resolved or suppressed.
Well, now, how has your work with the medium work with Tai Chi when you're speaking with clients? Are you using both together for some clients, or does one kind of indirectly give you information into another?
There are two separate appointments. So a TAI appointment, I need to choose a treatment based on what they've been telling me is an issue, and they lay on a massage table, and I'll work with them with the treatment. Some people like to come to me for both. They will both want to talk with their guides and get a treatment, and so I don't like upfront information from a person when it's a spirit guide session, so in that case, I usually feel intuitively what treatment I think they're going to be needing, and then I have their guide session, and then I know if I'm right about the treatment. If it's just Tai Yi, we'll chat a little bit about, you know, what's this issue here, and then I'll use my intuition to determine if they have the right issue, if it's the core issue, or if they're more talking about a symptom, because that's going to determine which treatment I choose. I'm using my intuition with the Tai Yi treatments. When I'm working with a person in a guide session, I am talking to their guides.
Right, because, and if you are really would love to have a core issue being resolved by using the Tai Chi, also that would be like nirvana, right? That would be the answer to everything, because it would be, in other words, really getting the flow to move versus, you know, what they're telling you, I guess, but when they're telling you, really that's just more like peeling the onion. Eventually you're going to get to the core issue anyway, right? Eventually. Hello? Oh, goodness. I think we have lost Tammy. Oh, dear. What we were talking about is I think we have lost her call. Tammy? Yes, we've lost her call. So, Tammy, please do call back in if you can hear this. What we were talking about was being able to somehow know your core issue versus all of your symptoms. And when we're getting all of these symptoms and we're reporting these symptoms, that's not really always what is going on. It is sometimes the expression of it that we're feeling or knowing. Tammy?
Yeah, I am back. Sorry, but I'm not sure what happened. We got dropped.
That's okay. So what I was saying before was is that, you know, it would be great, you know, if both of those worked in tandem, because if you can know the core issue in doing the Tai Yi, you would be able to, you know, really facilitate movement. But I guess really when you're doing Tai Yi, you're more like peeling the onion in essence, and eventually you will get to a core issue, potentially.
No, I like to get to the core issue right away. I like to get to the core issue right away. So I'll either feel it intuitively or I'm going to have their guides tell me. Because if I don't get to the core issue, then we're just,
mellowing.
Going back and forth.
Yeah, you're almost like just waddling in the water. You're not really getting anywhere, right?
Right, and I want the person to begin feeling the effects immediately so they can begin their healing process immediately.
Well, it sounds really great. Apparently, everybody needs to live by you to have those treatments, but that would be really great. But they can call you up and be able to have some guide. You could help do with the guide telephone calls, right? You could do appointments for that.
Yes, I do spirit guide sessions, and sometimes people want to talk to a deceased family member. I'm open to that. It works the same way. I just can't guarantee that a deceased person will come through. I can't force anyone to come into my office, and the deeper the bonding is with the person, the more likely they are to come through, but there's various factors, such as if a person dies very suddenly, whether it's a car accident or suicide or some other way, or murdered, then many times that person gets caught up in their mental and emotional bodies after the physical death has occurred. And in that case, I can't talk to them. What I can do is talk to your guides, and they can offer information on where that person is mentally and emotionally. So guides are always guaranteed deceased people, not so much. And so I can offer sessions over the phone, those types of sessions over the phone, on Skype, and in person. Tai, of course, needs to be in person because it's hands-on. And then I also offer coaching. Sometimes people want coaching on how to heal a specific issue. They just, like, they get information from their guides, great, but now they're like, what do I do now? I don't even know the first step. And then they call me up and ask me if I can coach them for a little bit to get them going on their journey of healing.
Yeah, and I think it's sometimes you just need a little bit more affirmation to be able to go forward that what you're knowing or what you're doing is actually in your best interest. Sometimes you just don't quite know the steps, you know, and you need that extra little help with coaching.
Yep.
Well, can you, we've really raced through this hour. Can you tell us a little bit of information about your website and how to purchase your book? That would be great.
Yes, my book, Loving Connor, Clairvoyance Memoir on Loving, Bonding, and Healing, is very different from what people might think it is. It's very solid. It's very grounded, and it's very honest in my own challenges with my teenage daughter. It's good for anyone who might be struggling with having an angry teenager at home and what do you do about it. So that's available on my website. I can send someone a paper copy. I have limited copies at home. Or you can get it on Amazon, on Kindle or paperback, and then Barnes & Noble on Nook or paperback. And then many other e-book stores have it as well. But those are the two easiest. And then my website is empowermentthroughhealing.org. And on my site, I have information on Tai Yi, the history of Tai Yi, where it comes from, how old it is, and also a list of some Tai Yi treatments that I offer and the description of those treatments and what they can do for you. I also have online scheduling on my website if people want to schedule themselves in.
Great. And when you're doing these appointments with spirit guides, it's not something like you need to buy a package of like 20 and, you know, maybe we'll get to it. You said you just jump right in and you get what needs to be done. And the same thing with the Tai Yi. You're not, you know, coming to me for the next 100. You know how like sometimes, I'm sorry to use the word chiropractors, but, you know, come see me 4 times a week for 5 weeks and then we'll assess it and then maybe we'll do 20 times that month, you know.
Yeah,
your body has
to
be able to take control to be able to start doing something, correct?
Absolutely. Tai Yi is not a requirement for healing. It's just a tool that can move you a little faster in your healing process as it addresses certain ailments. So some people like to get 1 or 2 treatments, and that's fine, and they're done, and that's okay. Some people like to get Tai Yi their whole life because there's so many treatments that can continue to benefit you mentally and emotionally. If you're in a position where you feel like, well, I don't have physical pain, you know, I'm feeling pretty good, but man, I'd like to know what my abilities are. I'd like to open up this other part of me. Well, there's treatments for that too. So there's treatments to help bring clarity and many other things. So there are people all the way from, I just want one treatment, to I never want to stop getting Tai Yi, and then anything in between. And that just has to be personal choice. People have asked me after a first session with their guides, how many times do you think I should come back and talk with my guides? And my answer is always the same. I won't answer that. I won't ever indicate how often you should talk with your guides. You can talk with your guides as much as you want to on your own, but to come to me, that has to be personal choice.
Yeah. Well, and not knowing where your phone call went before, I guess somebody was trying to poke in there, or else maybe we just had weird electronic lines. Who knows? But it was great having you today. And is there anything you'd like to offer in closing? We have about 3 minutes left.
No matter where you seek out your assistance, whatever teacher you choose to go to or whatever modality you want to utilize for your healing, make your healing a priority. It will be worth it in the end, because when you can get to that place where every day you wake up and you're excited about your day and you really love your life and you feel like you're living your passion on a daily basis, that is, in my opinion, the purpose of life. And when you can get there, it's a beautiful experience.
Yeah, there's so many people that are just living each day to survive each day, and they can't wait until the day is over so the next one can start. And I'm like, why? It just repeated yesterday, you know? It was almost like I'm going to stand up and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to stand up and I'm going to sit down, and something just didn't click. I don't know what that was about, but I've been hearing that more and more frequently these days from a lot of people, and it's like, okay, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like much fun to me.
No, but it is definitely where a lot of people are, because they just don't know that next step to take. And I think they just don't know who to ask or how to reach out or how to find that. Or even, as you said, you know, we can speak to our guides on our own. It's just that we just don't trust what we're hearing or knowing. And we just need to know a little bit more to be able to be out on our own and doing great. And I think the work you do really does help a lot of people.
It does. It helps a lot of people. It helps me. The more I do it, the more I learn about people's guides. And I'm just always in awe of the amount of respect and compassion that people's guides have for the person that they're working with. And you're not assigned guides. You actually choose your own guides prior to birth, for the most part. And knowing who you're being, the family you're being born into, and the culture you've chosen, the time frame you've chosen, all of that, you've chosen your guides to assist you in your life pathway, and they'll be there at the time of your physical death and everywhere in between.
Well, that's absolutely interesting, and it sounds like a great thing. And I really hope that the listeners are able to just check out your website and definitely read your book. And the name of the book is Loving Connor, A Clairvoyance Memoir on Loving, Bonding, and Healing. And it is, as Tammy had said, it is on Kindle. It's on, you're able to purchase the book, you know, online, so you can just look at it and read it on your computer. And I think it's a great thing to be able to know that we do have choices and we can make better choices each day by just asking the questions. Who is my guide? Can you give me a little bit more information? Whereas, look, in the 50s and 60s, when I grew up, it was all about you just get up. Those were the days. You got up, you did your day, and you went back to sleep the next day. So it's great to know a little bit more information so you can make a little bit better choices each day. So thank you so much for being with us, Tammy. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
If you'd like more information on Tammy, her link is on today's show page. Please do check it and give Tammy a call and schedule an appointment. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.